Canucks Central Thursday. It's Dan Riccio and Satyar Shah. We are in the Kintec studio. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, supported by over 2,500 five-star Google reviews. Find your perfect fit at kintec.net. Lots to come. John Garrett will join us. You know what I want to ask Cheech today, Sat? If he's ever been in a goalie fight.
Oh, yeah. I think he's been into one.
Okay, well, don't ruin the answer for me.
Oh, sorry. But I mean, I'm pretty sure we just talked about this with you on this show before. Or maybe really? It was somebody else filled in. I don't know. But I know it's come up. I don't know if Josh remembers.
I mean, Cheech has been around a while. I'm sure he's had the question before.
Yeah. I don't think it was a goalie he fought, though.
Mm.
Maybe you should ask him.
Yeah, we should ask him. See, in a fight. I don't know about goalie fight.
Okay.
So in a fight. So how about that? The intrigue exists.
Is still there.
It still stands. We still have intrigue.
We'll catch up with John Garrett, who's at Mullet Arena, the site of the Canucks and Arizona Coyotes matchup tonight. Big one. Both of these teams are super hot right now. Working their way up the standings as we speak. But you know, there's been a lot of talk of Brock Besser coming off of the three-point night he had against the Dallas Stars, three assists, and you know, his point totals are where, at this point of his career, quite frankly, we should expect Brock Besser's point totals to be, even if the goals aren't quite there. And since Rick Tocchet came in to be the head coach of the Vancouver Canucks, Besser has 18 points in 20 games, but only the three goals. Are we seeing Brock start to find his game, or is this one of those times where Brock's picking up points as a complimentary piece?
So let me throw a couple of things by you here.
Okay.
When we talk about Brock Besser and how he's played, you brought something up the other day which made me think a little bit, which was, is Brock Besser actually more of a playmaker? He's not scoring a lot of goals. Is he a better playmaker? Is he making up for his lack of goal scoring and lack of, you know, overall impact by being a better facilitator? Because he's still piling up the points.
Yep.
So digging into the numbers, since Rick Tocchet took over, he has 18 points in 20 games in all situations, which is nearly a point per game pace, right? Still minus five over that stretch, but the points are clearly there. However, only three goals. So you look at it and you say, well, here's a guy that clearly is producing a lot, but he only has three goals out of those 18 points.
Yeah.
So is he riding the secondary point wave here? Well, actually, at even strength, over this 20-game stretch, he has six primary assists, which is tied for the team lead alongside JT Miller, who also has six primary assists at even strength. On the power play, he also leads the team, Besser does, with primary assists with three. Miller also has three, but he plays more on the first unit all the time. Besser now actually is the team's leading primary assist facilitator over this stretch since Rick Tocchet took over.
That's
so
very impressive.
You know, in terms of the numbers, that's notable. 20 games, and he has the most primary assist in all situations.
Yeah. So my thing with Brock, and there's a couple of things. I can see the points he's put up this year. Mm-hmm. I like the player that I see a lot of the time. This year hasn't been good enough on the whole, as we've talked about, even though the points remain there. But the thing with Brock that I can't seem to get over is I want more. Mm. I believe there's more, and I don't see more. Is this just who Brock is, and we should appreciate that player? Or is there a fair expectation that we can see more out of Brock Besser than being a 55, 60-point complimentary piece? Is there more to Brock Besser than what we've seen to this point as a Vancouver Canuck?
I think there absolutely is more, right? I mean, the question is there as much as we think there could be?
Mm.
Or do we have to frame what Brock Besser is differently? Because I do think one thing is actually happening right now, because he's still being productive, still doing good things. To your point, though, the defensive impact has not been there. The reason you feel like it can bounce back is because there is a track history. There is a good, you know, history of him being good defensively. My one question Is his lack of pace becoming a bigger issue in terms of playing through transition and being able to be quick enough with his reads and defensive play to still have that same impact as a two-way player?
The game has gotten faster.
He has not.
And that's been a problem.
It looks like a problem. Now, yeah. Is this maybe where bias comes in a little bit in terms of when I watch Besser, now all I see, or not all I see, but most of what I see is what he's not. Not quick enough, not getting the shot off. And that's when bias comes in, and mm-hmm. you start looking at somebody more negatively than positively, and the positive things you're not quite seeing as much. So
you're
focused
on what he can't do rather than what he does and does well.
Precisely. So what I want to do, watching him now a bit more closely, is try to identify, is he growing his game in a different way that still makes him impactful but different? Because he has adjusted his game to the type of player he is, and yeah. he's still being productive despite not having as much production last season. But this year, despite all the issues, he's still giving you a bottom line that's there, right? The question is, can he do more of it? I think he can, but to what degree, truly? Is he ever going to be that 30-goal guy, or should we look at this guy, 20, 25 goals, yeah. but a good facilitator off the wing?
So every time we talk to Brock, you can tell he wants to score more. Like, he wants the goals to be there. I don't know if it's been a conscious choice to become a better playmaker over these years. And this started a few years ago. The North Division season, Brock was the Canucks' best player going away, led the team in points, led the team with even strength points at 5-on-5 with 28 that year, and was just, quite clearly, the Canucks' most valuable player that season, at least most valuable skater that season. But as long as Brock is very vocal about wanting to be a 30-goal scorer, about wanting to score more. Like, I heard him on the postgame the other night with you and Bick and Randeep. Yeah. And by the way, all the postgame shows are available on the Canuck Central podcast feed. And even when he's getting a compliment about getting 3 assists, he's talking about the goals that he missed, that he did not score.
Yeah, and that's true. I mean, there are goals that he hasn't scored.
Yes.
Right? And I think those are issues. But to me, it's even beyond that, right? Because, like, I think he's the type of guy that, yes, he focuses on those things, but is he actually engaged enough physically?
Mm. Nope.
Because the board play stuff we talk about all the time.
Gone.
It's not there.
No.
And just the physicality around the net is always not there either. I know there's a play that really bugged you against the Dallas Stars. And this is a game, and the thing is, we talked about a post game. His game wasn't perfect. He had 3 assists. The Canucks won 5-2. He had a solid game. You don't want to overemphasize the negatives in his game, right? But there are moments that make you go like, and there's one that really sticks with you in that game.
So, yes, Brock had 3 assists, but there's a play in the second period, and everybody should remember it because it was probably Thatcher Demko's best save of the game. As puck comes out from behind the net, Ben is streaking towards the goal, gets his stick on it, Thatcher makes a great save. But if you're watching, what I see is Jamie Benn streaking through the middle of the ice. Brock Besser should be knowing that's his man and doesn't take him. Doesn't, as Rick Tocchet would say, chip a body, you know, impede his path to the net in some way, shape, or form so that he doesn't get there on time to make the bang-bang play and, if not for Thatcher Demko, score a goal. And when we think about Brock Besser, I know he's never going to be some savant defensively. I don't expect that of him. But I also expect him to be better than one of the worst defensive forwards in the league.
Yes.
And he has, over the course of this whole season, been one of the worst defensive forwards in the league. And even under Rick Tocchet, he's been on the ice for 14 goals for and 18 against. A lot happens when Brock Besser is on the ice. We're talking 20-game sample
here. It's been high event, very high event.
And for a team that's been a lot less high event since Rick Tocchet took over. So he's still been one of the worst defensive forwards on the team since Rick Tocchet took over. And you see it with the eye test. It's backed up by the numbers. And until Brock Besser gets better in that area of the game, I'm sorry, it's going to be hard for me to just keep pointing at the points and be like, well, at least he's doing that. Yeah, he's still losing his matchups. He's still getting scored on far too much when he's on the ice.
And that's why you hear the coach mention there's someone much more you can do. He's done some positive things, but let's be honest. Got to get quicker.
Yeah.
You got to play with more engagement. We think there's a better player there. And the numbers in and of themselves don't matter. And I think if anything should resonate with fans is that we saw, especially before the coaching change was made, how a lot of players had good numbers, but how were they playing hockey?
Not well.
Does that is that conducive to winning?
Yeah.
Brock?
It's not.
We're seeing the team improve, and Brock has made some improvements, but more has to happen before you can look at Brock and say, okay, now he's turning the corner as a net positive yeah. player, right? And there's so much more work he has to do. And I think the real reality here, too, is if he doesn't show some of that engagement, it's going to be very difficult for this team to move forward with him. We're talking about a player that we all agree is overpaid
yeah.
for what he brings.
Mm-hmm.
The rest of the league looks at him as being overpaid for what he brings.
It's not massively overpaid, but
enough.
We're talking about $1 million, $1.5 million, maybe a little bit more.
So what has to happen for a player who right now is viewed as being overpaid for him to not have that tag anymore?
He's got to keep up the amount of points he's putting up, and he's got to bring a better all-around game. He's got to be able to drive play a little bit better, too. You can't just be a complimentary winger making 6.65 a year.
Because if we thought that the numbers are the only thing that matters here, then Bester would have been moved at the deadline.
Yeah.
Because the numbers have, I mean, they've been good, even under talk, and even before that, he still had points, not a lot of goals, but still had a lot of points. But the market was the market around him.
Yeah.
So unless he makes the changes we're talking about, he's not going to be a more valuable player, right? And I'm not sure that's going to happen until you get to the offseason.
Mm-hmm.
Unless he really plays well and it continues what he's doing now and gets better and better, then we get to the offseason and perhaps now all of a sudden the market could be there for him. But for that market to build, I still think he has to put better performances.
Yeah. I think that starts in the summer. You know, I think Tockett has pretty much said it out loud. A lot of these guys got to have better summers.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll hear a lot of coaches say that, but
You can't be soft in key areas, right?
No, you can't.
And he's not. And the thing is, like, he hasn't always been a soft player, but right now, and to me, I don't even want to make excuses because to me, it's not about excuses. It's more about this is not what you're doing. You've shown you can do it. Now go and do it.
Yes.
And you have to overcome whatever it is you're going through at some point to be the player you need to be. Because, hey, the reality is, no matter where you are in life, you got to perform to the point to what you're getting paid.
Mm-hmm.
It's a business at the end of the day. No matter what you've gone through, you get a bit of a grace period, and at some point, you got to be able to deliver.
Well, you want the trade rumors to stop following you around. Your play's got to be undeniable, right?
Absolutely.
Like, at the end of the day, if Brock Besser was playing really well, the trade rumors wouldn't be following him over the last couple of years.
Now, do you have confidence that with some of the steps we've seen him take, that they have the right coach to get more of this out of him? Because I look at the text inbox. There is the odd text that comes in here that says, you guys are nitpicking and Brock's doing great. I support Brock. A few of those have come in.
His goals for percentage is 43% this
right.
year.
But the
it's awful.
The vast majority of these text messages, though, are very much very yeah. negative. Like, they're even saying, you guys are, why are you overrating? Like, we're literally just talking about what Besser's done, and people are saying you yeah. guys are overrating Besser. We're just talking about the numbers he has here, right? But it's very clear that there is a disconnect too with how fans view him.
Mm-hmm.
And for that to change, only one thing. I mean, it's a very simple answer here.
Well,
you mentioned it. Just play better. These yeah. guys just have to play better.
Everybody expected Brock to become a star, right? Everybody,
yeah.
after that first season, you all looked at him and was like, wow, this is going to be our next 30-goal scorer every single year, and it hasn't turned out that way. And Brock is forever going to be looked at as a guy that maybe is a, with a bullet, top-line winger in the league, and I don't think he's ever going to be that. But can he still be a valuable player? Yes, there is a world where he can do that, and he is still just 26.
Yeah, and you know, one thing that's also become very evident here, and this is why, like, when we talk about even JT, we talk about other players here, I don't have any interest in signing guys to big contracts or having anybody signed here to above $6 million unless they're a true impact guy.
Yeah.
Because you can get a Bevilier making 4 point something,
yep,
playing third guy in a line.
Yeah.
You can find a Mikheyev for under $5 million doing that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Kuzmenko, obviously lightning in a bottle, a bit of a different situation. But if I'm looking at complementary players, you can get guys that get paid less than Garland and Besser and give you different strengths.
Yeah.
And that can help you out. Because if Besser can't, the other thing Besser has to really grab here is that role on the power play. Like, if he truly wants to stay here long term, he's got to take that bumper spot.
Yep.
He's got to own it. Because if he doesn't own it, then where's your utility for getting paid 6.65? You're not playing on the first unit power play. You're not yeah. playing on the PK. You're not really a key figure in the top six. And that's where the personal accountability comes in. Like, there is opportunity here if you want to truly stay to seize it, but you got to seize it. And I'm at the stage now where it's like, you got to show it, man. Like, I have no more like, hey, let's give him some time. Like, this is literally your time. You want to be here? Show it now. And if you don't,
then they're going to find somewhere else for you to play.
And if they have to eat money, they'll do it.
Yeah. And so far, like, they haven't been all that, you know, all that enthused to eat money on Brock's contract, or else he would have been traded by now. You know, it was out there. If you ate or got it, got Brock's number down to $5 million for an acquiring team, he probably would be traded by now. But this team is betting, like, they see the talent and they see that there's more in there. And they're betting that it comes around and either he sticks and plays that way for this team, or somebody else comes along and gives them a valuation they're willing to take.
Yeah, at least you're getting something, or you're at least getting all the money off your books.
Yes.
You know, like, one thing they did with the Lazar move, and it's a small, far smaller deal, but they got all the money off the books for a fourth round pick. Mm-hmm. It's only like another couple million, but it was still term, right? That they moved out. I don't think they would have done it just to get the money off the books completely. Like, but is there a point that if somebody takes Besser's complete salary, because we get to the offseason, there aren't a lot of players available, and what if Vancouver's willing to take a fourth or a fifth for it?
Just like, to get rid of the money.
You know, but he's going to have to play better for that to happen still, right? Yeah. Like, that's what we're talking about here. Either for him to, A, be here long-term, like some people do want, but the more realistic scenario being for him to, as somebody pointed out, resurrect his career elsewhere. One basic thing, man. Seize the opportunity. Because you've been getting a lot of opportunity here over the years.
Yeah. And right now, you know, I think the top power play unit, the way that it has been playing suits Brock more, because it's not as stationary where he's just the net front guy, where now you have a little bit more rotation. So we saw him the other night end up on the half wall, a place that he's very comfortable in. Or he ends up in the bumper spot. Because they're rotating more often, he's not just stuck as the net front guy, which, you know, he had some level of success in, but is, as we talked to him before the year, not the most comfortable position for him.
Yeah, and this is, you know... And that's the thing, right? When it doesn't set it up, when it's not set up for you to fully succeed and you still have to adjust, it becomes a level of adaptation, which is, hey, great players find a way to adapt. But one thing we're learning about Besser, and we're learning about certain players, and this is the difference between superstars and complementary stars and good players, guys who can give you something and guys that adapt, or guys that have to be in prime situations or have to be in the ideal situation to be productive.
Yeah.
I think Besser is the type of player that has to be in an ideal situation for him to be the best version of himself.
Right.
That's true for most people, but a lot of great players overcome their environment or their role to some degree to provide high levels of production or value. That's what Pettersson is able to do. Yeah. That's why he's a superstar type of player. And I think with Besser is, like somebody texted in, imagine what people would be saying if Besser wasn't on his way to a career year in points. Tough crowd. He is in terms of raw numbers, not in terms of points per game, and also not in terms of goals per game. Like, it's just in raw production, but again, it's availability. He has it. But I think people are wanting Besser to be something that he showed potential of in his first year.
And he may not be that.
And as long as that's there with you in terms of how the market reacts to you and how people view you, that's why there is a sense of, does he need to go elsewhere for him to wash this off of him to some degree? And that's not to make an excuse. It's just to be like, it didn't quite work here for you to be the best version of yourself. And can the team get the best version of you out of you anymore here?
Yeah, it's one I don't think there's an easy answer. We've seen it enough times. I'm almost tired of, you know, expecting to see Brock finally take that step, but it may end up that he is here next training camp just because of his salary and the way the league is currently situated. He's 26. One of the biggest issues with Brock is pace. Can you improve pace as you get older as a player? How do you improve your pace as a player as you get older? People keep pointing to Bo Horvat, you know, whenever there's a skating conversation that comes up. And Bo did a lot of that very early on in his career to work up towards being a faster player and a better skater. Can Brock increase his foot speed? Can he get quicker, at least some more short area quickness, even at age 26?
Yes, of course you can. I mean, you're not going to all of a sudden become this great skater, but you can make marginal improvements or enough improvements to stay with where the trend is going, right? Some people, though, however, have a certain stride that is not going to be significantly improved unless you completely rebuild your skating. And that's just the tough thing to do at age 27, 28. You know what I mean? Like, if you want to rebuild, usually you kind of have to do that when you after you get drafted 18, 19. Like, there's a window there where you can do it. It's very difficult to completely change your mechanics in your late 20s, right? Or heading into your 30s. But you can still make some level of improvements. The question is, how much can we really expect from it? But one thing is also very, very clear. This organization, we saw the piece in The Province, too, about conditioning. Mm-hmm. Talkett speaks about this. And also just overall dedication. You know, we joked about this. Show up early.
Yeah.
You know, be here a few weeks before training camp next year. And
that's going to be the Canucks slogan next summer.
Yeah.
You know? We were here 3 weeks before training camp.
And I think part of that's also code for, like, you guys can do more in the offseason.
Yeah.
You know, like, in terms of bettering yourself as players, a lot of you can do more.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I'm sure you work hard, but do you really work hard enough? And there's a difference. Again, we've talked about this a lot in terms of resetting the mindset and changing everything. And I think we also have to be aware of, Talkett has come in and made some changes, but it's still a work in progress. There's another layer of mindset change that has to happen this offseason that you hope he gets through to these guys. And that is, you can do more this offseason.
Mm-hmm.
Just like you saw here, there's a baseline you can give to be a whatever hockey team that can play in the NHL. Sure, you can do that. But what can you do to be a good hockey player? What can you do to be a great hockey player? And to do those things, you got to do even more in the offseason. You got to be even more dedicated to the team and everything you do in preparation for the season. And clearly, there's an organizational feeling that's not happening with everyone. And I'm not saying Besser necessarily, because we can't say it.
Yeah.
But it's clear they're saying they need to get more out of him this offseason. I think this offseason, too, there are no more excuses either here. Like, with Talkett clearly setting what the rules are.
Setting the bar, yeah.
Are these guys actually willing to do the work away from the hockey team? It's easy to work hard under the new teacher when he's come in late in the season and he's controlling you every day. But what's your discipline like, and what's your work ethic like when they can't reach you in the offseason? When you are on your own for 2 months, what do you do then?
Yeah, well, you have essentially, 4 months? If you want to say April, you take a couple weeks off at the after the season's over, April 13th, and you've got May, June, July, and August to get ready for the next year. How much work are you putting in? How early are you getting into training camp? That's a big question mark, and one that seems like the challenge is already out there for some of these players. Jacob and Port Moody, the problem with players wanting to improve is, why should they when they have guaranteed money? Brock has already made, 35, 36 million? Or at least he will at the end of this contract. But he's going to be an unrestricted free agent at 28 years old. If he wants to get another big deal, he's got to start playing better.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So that's the motivation for these players. And also, you know, it's their livelihood. So, and if you're professional about it, you're always trying to get better. And a lot of these guys are so competitive that they're trying in different ways.
Yeah.
But maybe they don't always have the right off-season regime to get that done right.
Precisely. And those are the things you got to do. And I think Gordy Locke makes a good point on Twitter, too. On top of everything you guys are saying about Brock, I don't know if he fits with Talkett's vision. Vernon Davis was a great player. And right or wrong, Mike Singletary said, can't win with him. Can't do it. I mean, there is something about that.
I want winners.
Yeah. But one thing we've seen early, and it's early on, but Talkett has said he's willing to work with all these guys. Now it comes down to, hey, I'm showing a willingness to it. Are you taking that branch?
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's clearly an olive branch being extended in terms of, this is how it's going to work between us. Do you accept and do the work?
Stan Riccio, Satyar Shah. A lot of thoughts on Brock Besser. We'll keep getting to more of your texts. Also, John Garrett is going to join us. Cheech is up next here on Canuck Central. Oh, man. Final season of Succession? Really?
That's what it looks like. Yeah, final season.
Damn.
You know what? I will say, though, we always complain about this, about shows
ending
too soon, and then we complain about shows going on too long. And maybe leaving you wanting is better.
Yes.
And then maybe they'll make like a Succession movie in 5 years. That's gonna suck, but we'll be eagerly anticipating it.
Isn't The Walking Dead like still going? It's crazy.
There's like spin-offs on it.
Who watches that?
I don't know. I was into it for a bit, and then I was like, I can't watch zombies and people getting killed every single day.
So now you just watch The Last of Us.
There's less of, I mean, it's more like traditional humans killing each other, which is great for a zombie movie. Yes.
This is very true.
Yeah.
All right. It's Dan Riccio, Satyo Shah. We're in the Kid Tech studio. Let's bring in our next guest. Live from Mullet Arena, it is John Garrett. Cheech, what's happening?
Not much. They're prepping the cheerleaders here. It's a little loud, but we'll muddle through.
Are you?
It's pretty close confines. It reminds me, I played junior in Peterborough. It reminds me of the Oshawa rink that we used to play in. Oshawa Generals, and you remember those guys.
So it reminds you of a OHL rink.
Yes, yes. A little fancier. The seats are nicer, and Coors Light is $14, so.
how much were Coors Light back in the day at a game?
Yeah. Oh, they were cheap. They weren't $14, let's put it that way.
How's the view from the broadcast booth?
Oh, it's great. It's great. We're, I'd say, 15 rows back from the ice.
Oh, so it's perfect. You got a nice close-up view tonight. Did they give you a mullet wig, too, or no?
No. No, come on. These are benefactors of ASU, the mullet family.
Yes, they are. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, people think it's actually about a mullet. No, it's
well,
like people's
last name.
Well, they
were giving away mullets at the first home game of the year.
Oh, I know.
I can understand why people are confused.
Wig on, yes.
Throw a wig on to come watch the hockey game.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
I mean, the Abbotsford Canucks
We walked back from the rink. And I know for at least Shorty and Murph, it's a throw back to their college days. And
oh, yeah.
There's 54,000 students at ASU.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's amazing.
And they can only have a 4,000-seat arena?
Yeah.
I think,
well, their football stadium. The football stadium and basketball stadium are full-size, but the hockey program is relatively young, and even though they are Division I,
Before we get into the Canucks, what'd you make of the Jordan Binnington rant or tirade last night?
Yeah, I think it's just been bubbling up all season long.
Oh, yeah.
And you look at his stats and you look at the way the team's gone, and his coach isn't very sympathetic to his act. Remember, was it about a month ago where Craig Berube said that our goalie should just stop the puck, forget about taking penalties, and he can probably use the two games off or more.
I would have liked to see him and Marc-Andre Fleury go at it, though. Not going to lie.
Yeah.
I mean, Fleury wanted it, too. Everyone wanted it.
Yeah. Oh, I know. I wouldn't want, if I was Vegas, if I was Minnesota, I wouldn't want Marc-Andre Fleury fighting.
Yeah, no. Month out from the playoffs, you know, like that's
you might get your fingers jammed or something, and I would want him.
I will say this: I mean, the goaltending position has evolved quite a bit, right? And you know, we talk so much about guys now; they're more cerebral, and the great ones are the ones that are very cool under pressure, and they don't get razzled at all. But if you go back through history, like a lot of the great goaltenders were kind of like Jordan Binnington, right? Like go back to Billy Smith, go back to Ron Hextall, like going back to the '80s and even before that, a lot of goalies were even more, let's say, wild than Jordan Binnington currently is.
Well, we didn't have a team psychologist and all the extra help that the goalies have nowadays. There was no goalie coaches, so you didn't even have a goalie coach to help you out in practice. I mean, practices were shooting galleries. Most of the coaches, it didn't matter. You didn't have a goalie warm-up. You did 3-on-0s and everybody be trying to score. It was, I think it... You go back and, like you say, Eddie Belfour and the guys who were a little, let's say, loose off the ice. And I think that is a byproduct of playing the position with very little help.
Ed Belfour, more fights on the ice or at the bar?
Oh, at the bar. At the bar. And then, I'm going to give you $1 million to let me off. Yeah, okay. Yeah, that'll work.
How many goalie fights were you in?
Oh, a bunch. At WHA, you always had to pair up. And so you'd end up with... I remember one with Al Smith. He was with the New England Whalers, and I was with the Minnesota Fighting Saints, and he's six. Well, he was. He's passed away. He was 6'2 or 3 and 220 when he was in shape, and he wasn't in shape very often. And he was dragging me around the ice, and we had the line brawl going, and everybody was both benches completely emptied, and the coaches were involved. And Al was trying to get at our tough guys. And so my job was to just hold on and make sure that he wasn't third man in on some of the other fights. And he dragged me around for a good 10 minutes. And after it all settled down, I had to go off and puke. I was so tired. It was just... there was a bunch of other ones, too. I remember one in Phoenix, too. We had Gary Kurt, who was another tall goalie. And he dragged me around the ice in a... bench clearing.
But couldn't you fight Darren Pang or something? Like, why you got to go after all the big guys, Cheech?
Yeah, no, I know. And the guys used to practice fighting in practice. That's how often they, Jack Carlson used to give pointers on how to fight, and you yank the guy's sweater and throw the punch at the same time. And, you know, like Kevin Bieksa and the Superman punch, that sort of thing, except with grabbing the sweater first. And we literally once every 2 weeks have a 5-minute fighting practice. That's hockey.
The game has changed a little bit, eh?
Well, yes. The game has changed.
I mean, we were joking before the show began, because the Q has banned fighting. He's now banning fighting in general.
For the start of next year, yeah.
So that's kind of where it's getting to. I mean, forget goalie fights. Even guys in junior aren't going to be allowed to fight. So, I mean, it's getting less and less. I guess that's the way that for fighting to be completely eliminated, isn't it? That you take it away from the lower levels, then by the time we get to the NHL level, let's say in 10, 15 years, then... You know, we're never even going to see fights.
You're probably right. You're probably right. And the banning fights in junior, I like that rule because you have 20-year-olds fighting 15-year-olds, 16-year-olds, and just the size mismatch. And then you get in the playoffs, and you got some guy going after your star player who is 150 pounds, and the other guy's 200 pounds. It's in junior, I agree with it. When you get to the NHL level, unless the officials get a lot better policing the game, you're going to have let the players police themselves. You're going to have some kind of accountability with the players, or you're going to have a guy's diving all over the place and stick work, and it'll just be the one the other night. And I thought the referees handled it very well. Noah Juulsen hit, and then came in and grabbed him, and that was a clean hit. And then the referees gave roughing penalties instead of the instigator penalty. And that way the guy doesn't get 17 minutes in penalties, and the team who's the Canucks had the power play. The team that was wronged, and they get a power play opportunity. To me, that was the right call, and I think if refs did that, and that didn't lead to any other rough stuff during the game. That was a one-time thing, and I don't know why Faxa thought it was a dirty hit. I'm sure once he saw it again, he probably didn't see it and just saw the guy down on the ice.
Yeah.
So I think there's ways that they could get that out, the fighting after clean hits. And that's one of the things they were talking about at the GM's meetings, too, was try and get that out of the game. And that would be a way to do it. And I really think that. But to me, it's going to be a while before you can get fighting out of the game. By the time you get to the NHL, they're men. You're completely grown. You know what you're getting into. You don't have to fight, but you have to be accountable for your actions. And if the refs don't call it, then the players have that option that they can make the other team pay.
John Garrett, our guest. So Canucks have won 5 in a row. The annual late season push is here. But, you know, I think what is different about this compared to last year they scored a lot of goals on the power play last year, and Thatcher Demko would stand on his head, and they won a bunch of games that way. But even these last two, Thatcher's made some big saves, but I for most of it, the Canucks have been pretty comfortable. They've been a lot better defensively, I would say, during this compared to last year when they were pushing with Boudreau.
Yeah, I really think that, especially in the first period of games, Thatcher has been really good.
Yeah.
And then the team seems to build around it and say, well, okay, we're still in it. We didn't play very well, and then the next two periods are all right. But the other night, Jamie Benn, 30 seconds, yeah, right in the middle. And if that goes in, then what happens?
Yeah.
The Ottawa game, Chychrun, breakaway, Giroux, post,
yeah,
first period. And, again, Thatcher makes the saves, gets a break off the post, and then the Canucks come back. And I think the one element is Thatcher is playing like Thatcher did last year.
Well, he certainly is. And I think that's maybe the best thing you can take away from all this is the confidence you may have in the goaltending for next year. Because what we saw from Thatcher at the beginning of this season, that's not the Thatcher we know. And maybe that is the biggest thing we can take away from how the Canucks are playing, isn't it?
Yeah, that. And I think if you can build off the, and I hate to use the word structure, but they are more structured. They make the smarter plays than they did at the start of the season. There hasn't been as many pizzas up the middle. And, I really think that they're playing a smarter game. And if you get Thatcher and you get Philip Peronic in and he works out, so if you could get at least three defensemen that you can trust,
mm-hmm,
and maybe four, but three for sure. And then, like, who would you say right now? You got Quinn Hughes and hopefully Hronek, so there's two.
Yeah.
And then is Ethan Bear going to be that guy for your third? You have to have. And then you've got Tyler Myers and OEL and those guys, but I wouldn't want them to be in my top four all the time.
Yeah, there's still some work they got to do on the back end, but you know, Quinn's playing 25, 30 minutes a night. You know, how long can that last? You can do it right now, but you don't want to do it over a full 82. We were just talking a lot about Brock Besser, and he had the three assists the other night. You know, all the trade speculation going into the deadline. Are you seeing Brock start to find his game now coming out of the deadline?
Yeah, I think he's more relaxed for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And I think because JT's playing so well that it helps Brock. And Brock is showing more confidence and hanging on to the puck more. And he's getting higher quality chances. He's missed the net a couple of times from point blank range. And I'd like to see Brock next training camp. Mm-hmm. I think he'll be better. I think his skating will be better. And I think that's the big thing is he's just got to get that quickness back that he had when he first started, before he had the back hip injury into the open gate.
Mm-hmm. Well, a lot of that also comes down to, you know, the amount of work you have to put into the offseason. So what do you make of Tocchet really pushing that, not only with Besser, but a lot of these players about, you know, showing up here early and also the amount of work they have to put in once they get into the summer?
Yeah, most players, I think most players are pretty conscientious with it, but I really think that it has to be a specific program, individualized for each player. And you look at last year, Quinn talking about it, he was going to work on his shot so he could be a threat from the point on the power play during the summer. Well, you know, Quinn's got so many assists and does so many other things, and that didn't really work out. But Elias, his power and strength of skating, and he talked about working on that in the summer, and you can see in his strides,
mm-hmm,
that he's stronger. He might not be physically stronger, but his skating is strong. And I think that's, you look, go up and down the lineup and every player will get an individual program and hopefully it will produce results.
What are you seeing from JT lately?
Well, he's on fire. He's just
looks good.
Yeah, he does. He does. And he's playing with that kind of, obviously, Rick Tocchet likes him.
Yeah.
And I think he really appreciates the added responsibility. The game against Ottawa, what did he take? 36 faceoffs, mm-hmm. something like that. It was a personal high, season high, and it showed that Rick Tocchet, okay, you're our guy. And I think JT thrives on that.
He does. And the thing about JT, which is interesting, is he does play a lot better later in the season compared to earlier in the year. And, you know, it just makes me kind of think, like, he's the type of player. We see Pedersen as well, and we see Kuzmenko. The good players are the guys that get better as the season goes on, and they can carry that into the postseason. Like, what do you think we could see from guys like Pedersen and guys like, say, JT Miller? And we saw it in the bubble, but this is different. This is like going from, like, we're talking about going from playing 82 games.
You're going into dreamland.
No, I'm not talking about this year.
They have to make the playoffs first.
I'm talking about in the future when I'm saying that.
You're talking about any year?
In the future.
You're going into your crystal ball.
Not even crystal ball.
If they make the playoffs, will it translate?
Well, not this year.
Playoffs is the goal next year, Cheech.
People say I'm negative, and you're saying you're questioning if you're going to make the playoffs in the next decade. Yeah, I think 1 year they'll make the playoffs. I mean, JT has 7 more years left on his contract. I mean, I'd hope we see him in the playoffs here in Vancouver.
You hope he's in the playoffs.
I'm trying to be positive here.
I don't think you can read the players' better play in the second half as that translating into the playoffs.
Yeah.
Just because it's hard to see a team that's out of it with no pressure, and then all of a sudden you're in that pressure situation of the playoffs.
Yeah. Well, because, I mean, going back to the first year he was here, that's the year the Canucks had a good year, right? And then the pandemic hit. Like, even that year, he got off to a decent start. He closed very well, and then the pandemic hit. But he's the type of guy that, for his career, he gets stronger as the second half of the season goes on. Like, the numbers, it's been consistent for him as the season's gone on.
Okay, and I'm not getting your point here, Seth.
Well, my point is, I mean, I'm just saying, like, he's the type of player that whose game gets better as the season goes on. Like, if the Canucks can actually make the playoffs, you know, in the next couple of years with him, could he be the type of player that can actually, you know, elevate, get even better once we get into the postseason? Is he the type of player that performs better as the season goes on and into the postseason? It's not that controversial, yeah. I don't think.
No, I don't, but I'm not buying it.
No, that's fine. Yeah.
I know you're trying to sell it to me, but I'm not buying it.
I mean, it's a question.
How can you say when a team is out of the playoffs and the guys are playing better and the coach is using certain players more?
Yeah.
And the other teams come in and take you pretty lightly. How can you say that, okay, because you get better numbers after you're out of it, that's going to translate into you're going to be a good playoff performer?
No, that's why I asked the question.
Yeah. Oh, I thought you were selling me. And
no, I'm asking you the question. Could you know?
You were
be
asking
interesting.
Me a question that you wanted your own answer.
No, I don't care. I don't care what your answer is, Cheech. I just asked the question. You can answer whatever you want.
I'm answering it. I don't see it. I really think that you look at the teams that make the playoffs. And you look at the McKinnons and how about the Leafs? Oh, yeah, Austin Matthews, he's got 60 goals. Wow, what a year he's had. And how'd they do? Oh, first round, gone. So I don't think you can read it into you have to have guys that perform most of the season, all season long, and then go into the playoffs and pick it up a bit. Those teams are the teams that they even elevate their game after they've made the playoffs and continue on for four rounds.
Well, it almost felt like after the way they finished last year, there was almost like they expected that the momentum would just carry into the start of this season, and then that clearly just didn't happen. So if nothing else, I hope this serves
as...
It
kind of makes my point, doesn't it?
I just hope this serves, or that serves as a lesson for the core of this team, that just because you won a bunch of games in March and April doesn't make you guaranteed to start hot the next year.
No. And everybody starts at the same, and everybody has the hopes and dreams, and you always think in training camp, oh yeah, this looks like a good team. Look at what we got up the middle. Look at the goaltending. Look at the top three defensemen, top four defensemen we got. Everybody likes that. But then after the first month and a half, you realize, okay, there's some holes in this lineup.
Cheech, we always appreciate it. The listeners are absolutely loving it. And they're on your side. So.
Yeah, I think they are on my side. Yeah. Oh, yeah, that was good. Oh, let's look at the Leafs every year. They're there. Look at look at the Canadians the year that they surprised everybody, and they had Toffoli and Carey Price and Shea Weber, and they all played well, but then they played much better once they got in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
They played well to get in the playoffs, and then they got to the finals because they played better throughout the playoffs, and they weren't great in the finals, but they got there.
Yeah. Jeff Petrie was unreal for them. And, of course, the last great sequence we've seen from Carey Price as well.
Yes.
Cheech.
Well, Shea Weber was done after that. That was his swan song. Where's he now? Where's he playing now?
He's a Coyote. Yeah, you might see him at the building.
He's a Coyote. Yeah, maybe that dead money team would be better than the team that they've got put on the ice. Who have they got? They got Shea Weber. They got Pavel Datsyuk.
Yep. Marian Hossa, I think, is still there. Yeah. Marian Hossa, Andrew Ladd.
Yeah.
Throw Dave Boland on that team. Yep.
Yeah. There we go.
Chris Pronger as well. So they're just missing a goalie, Cheech. So if you want to come out of retirement,
sign me money for the cap reasons. Yeah, okay.
Thanks for this, Cheech.
Okay, talk to you later.
There he is, the great John Garrett.
Oh yeah,
the text inbox is hilarious right now.
It is funny. I mean, it's funny. I mean,
Sat and Cheech, great radio. Love it.
That's a bit of everything. It's like, come on, you're rambling, grasping. Listen to Cheech, Sat. Yeah, it's like arguing with your dad is what somebody texted him. I was just asking you a question. Like, it's like we talked about before. Like, hey, JT played well down the stretch. He's playing well. His first career, he's always played well down the stretch. I'm interested to see, like, is he the type of guy that can get better into the playoffs and he performs better in the postseason or not? Like, is he that type of player or not? You know,
a lot of these guys did play pretty well in that bubble playoff.
Yeah. But it was
Alvina said, that bubble playoff.
Well, the difference too is that came off a training camp, like a 2-week training camp, and right into it. Like,
yeah.
They didn't continue the season into the playoffs. And that's a huge challenge when you go from playing 82 games and you take a few days off and you into a 7-game series. That's a different type of animal, you know? And not every player can perform better after an 82 game season and do well. And because we haven't seen this team, you know, make the playoffs in an 82 game season since 2015, we're left to hypothetically ask the question what they would look like if they actually do get into the postseason.
This version of JT, the way he's been playing lately, I'll say definitely looks like a guy who could have success in the playoffs. But let's see him have success in October first. Can this team get out of the first month of the season not being in the basement of the standings? That would be at least where you like to start next season. Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah. Coming up, we'll get into the draft. Prospect Central is next with Scott Wheeler.